so we have Zach Miller with us today. He's the president and founder of Jofroyo. They have generously brought us samples in the back. So if you haven't helped yourself and just come in, come to the big white and orange chest back there. He has a very amazing past. He's owned or operated 34 franchises across 5 different brands. Jofroyo is a dairy innovation company, and he's here to tell us a little bit about his story. So please welcome him.
Okay, thank you. My name is Zach. I'm lactose intolerant. Just want to get that out of the way. Hi, thank you. Thank you for the introduction, and thank you for Echo Factory and everybody from Echo, and especially Mike, for inviting me here today. And thank you for the attendance. I appreciate the opportunity to share with you about my path and how I got to this point standing in front of you guys today. Hopefully you've enjoyed the product that you've been drinking this morning. That is our product. It's called Jofroyo from the company perspective. However, the product itself is a probiotic cold brew. It is lactose-free, right? First benefit that I looked for when creating that product. It's also probiotic, and it's cold brewed with extra protein. It's a fantastic product. I'm not here to talk about that product, but to give you some perspective of how I arrived at that position, how you have that product in your hand right now, I'll give you the backstory, okay? So a little bit about my past. On the screen, you'll see some of the products, companies, brands that I've been associated with over the past 20 years of my career. I went to Azusa Pacific University as an undergrad business student. I went to the University of Oxford as a master's degree student with a double MBA in finance and strategic management. I went back to Azusa Pacific to teach. I was the youngest full-time business faculty member that they had at that time. So I kind of started my career talking and teaching about stuff I hadn't done. Sound familiar? I wasn't a very comfortable position because as I sat in those same seats as a student a few years prior to that, I wondered, do they really know what they're talking about? And I'm serious when I say that. And it was a really uncomfortable yet fascinating perspective now to be in front of the students talking about what I hadn't done. And I wanted to change that. The very first thing that I did as a business professor is I started an entrepreneurial tract. I had to sit on 2 committees and a subcommittee and a subcommittee of a subcommittee. And I decided I'm going to do something with this. I'm going to write a curriculum for entrepreneurship. And I did. First thing was to get it passed through the catalog. Second was to actually do it. So now I can't stand up there and teach something again that I don't know anything about. So what I did is I took the students through a process of opening up a business. We went through the architectural, the legal. I brought in an attorney. I brought in some real estate experts. And I actually started a business myself through this class with the students in my hip pocket. We went to the building department. Where do you build how do you build a store? You pull a permit. Where do you get a permit? You go to the city hall. Where is city hall? What do they do? What do they look like? What are the questions that they ask you? How do you do the whole architectural and plan approval process? And we did through 2 semesters of class. I went through the process of opening up my first Little Caesars pizza. It was a great college campus style business, right? Pizza. Can't go wrong. It's also very, very simplistic in its basic tenet of economics. One size pizza means one size dough ball, means one size pan, which means one size box. Fantastic. I'll get to Little Caesars in a little bit. That's how I got onto the Little Caesars path. In between that career there, after my Oxford journey, I did go to the Disney company. I worked there in food finance, worked my way up, saved them $3.5 million, and got my boss a bonus and a raise. So I realized something else about the corporate ladder. You know, it's about the rung that you're on, and when you're too low on that rung, you don't really benefit from your experiences there. So fantastic company, learned a tremendous amount in the food finance division, and I still have a lot of those learnings with me today. So I've spent some time in that large organization. What else do we have up here? Carvel is from the East Coast. Anybody recognize Carvel? All right. Awesome. I was the second Carvel on the West Coast. The first one was in Moore Park. Mine was in Azusa. I'll tell you a little bit more about that as well. Cinnabon Bakery, we were the very first street-side Cinnabon. First time ever outside of a turnpike, a mall, or an airport. So I'm proud of that. I love Cinnabons to this day. I don't shy away from making a little pit stop at Cinnabon whenever I see one. Let's see, what else do we have? Sonic Burger. Sonic was more of a real estate play, and it was an interesting opportunity for us. My brother-in-law is a contractor, land developer, if you will, and he saw an opportunity to take a real estate play and build something that somebody would want eventually. Let me explain that. There was a bulldozer pushing dirt way out in Southern California, way down by El Centro, California. Anybody been to El Centro, driven through? He was driving through for another job. He worked for Jack in the Box at the time, and he saw a bulldozer pushing dirt. And he got out of his car, ran out into the field, and waved his hands to the bulldozer guy. And the guy freaked out, right? He's like, why is this guy yelling at me, waving and flagging him down? He wanted to know, what's coming? What are you pushing dirt for? Well, the rumor was Walmart was coming to town, and they were going to build a Walmart. So he called me, and he's like, hey, what do you think we buy some dirt with the hope that Walmart comes in and actually does a deal? I'm like, I'm in. Okay, whatever that means. Well, it was a fantastic deal because when the Walmart foreman was there, we actually drove down there and asked him, hey, we own the corner half-acre lot here. What do you think we should put on that half-acre lot? And he looked at us like, what are you guys talking about? You bought that dirt. You don't even know what you're doing. This is part of the entrepreneurial spirit, guys. This is what you do. You look for opportunities and you take a risk. Not a stupid risk, a calculated risk. If you have a big box retailer coming and you see an opportunity, get in front of it. See what happens. You can always flip the dirt. We ended up building a Sonic Burger. Sonic happened to be the largest purchaser of out parcels in all of Walmart's real estate portfolio. There's more Sonic Burgers than there are McDonald's in Texas. It's crazy. So we built a Sonic Burger. We built it to spec. I went to training. I learned how to do a continuous cook flat top for hamburgers. It was fantastic. We ended up building two. We built another one on a Target Greatland is what it was called at the time. It's like a super Walmart for Target. Really a real estate play. So we built the building, fully tenanted the building with ourselves, sold the tenancy, had another franchisee come in and lease back the property from us. Then we sold the property as a fully tenanted real estate deal. It was fantastic. Fun time to really learn about building something from nothing, literally from the ground up, looking at it from multiple lenses through franchise development, through real estate development, through fully tenanted net triple net lease opportunities, and then doing an exit strategy from the whole soup to nuts. So that was my Sonic experience. We did two of those here in Southern California. With you can't quite see down here, but there's a little fresh pasta grill. This is one that hasn't gotten off the ground yet just because it's gathering dust in my portfolio. It's fully developed from basically a Subway perspective of fresh pasta going down the make line and having different sauces and fresh pastas that cook in 30 seconds and different meats and proteins. Verizon Wireless is down here. I took an opportunity to go with Verizon Wireless, not because I love Verizon, but because they're very scalable. They have a good system and a good methodology to their floor plan, their layout. Back in the day, let's go back 15 years. Do you remember a store called Cell Phone? The name of the store was Cell Phone or Cellular. They were unbranded mom and pop cell phone stores, and you walk in, it goes a little like this. Well, hello, welcome. Would you like to buy a cell phone today? Which one do you like? Well, I kind of like the blue one. Oh, the blue one's the best one we have. Well, actually, hey, what about that white one over there? You know what? I'm glad you mentioned the white one because the white one is the best one that we have. It gets a better reception than the blue one. I'm kind of thinking that my family, we all want to get the same. What do you have with five of the same? Well, we've got the silver on special. It's the best package we offer. It just was so confusing. It was five different wireless companies under the same umbrella with somebody kind of hawking deals from the inside of their jacket. And I saw an opportunity to systematize and grow that as a single brand, create a little bit more efficiency. You don't have to buy five different carriers' phones that only work for them. You don't have to advertise five different specials. You don't have to train your employees to understand five different data plans, wireless plans, texting plans. So I ended up acquiring five mom and pop cell stores, and I converted all of them to Verizon Wireless. And over the course of 8 months, I did five and flipped them. Turned each one of those into a branded store, put them into a package, portfolio, if you will, and sold five Verizon Wireless stores after 8 months. It's about systems. It's about looking at opportunity and taking that path of what can I do well? What are the economics of this business? How can I create differentiation? Differentiation being a single brand? Yeah, absolutely. Because at that time, there weren't very many independent, single-branded stores. Now we have quite a few Verizon Wireless authorized retailers. I was before that time. We have a lot of T-Mobile authorized retailers. That was before my time. I was ahead of that wave in that perspective. But I saw the opportunity to systematize and grow profitably with a cell phone store. What else do we have? University of Washington, I had the honor of teaching there for 4 years as a business faculty member at the Foster School of Business in Seattle. And I taught all kinds of business entrepreneurship classes, from the MBA perspective to the executive MBA, all the way down to the 301 finance class, still teaching seniors about corporate finance and entrepreneurial finance and what that looks like from a teaching perspective. And it was fantastic because at that point in my career for University of Washington, I could stand in front of the group and speak from experience. And that was much more comfortable of a place to be than I was prior. And I don't begrudge my earlier experience or lack thereof, but I really reflect on my time at the University of Washington as something of great value, not just for me, but for the experiences that I could share. Dannon is part of the journey after all of these businesses came to be. I decided to formulate a product, fly myself to New York City. I filled my bottles, my Arrowhead empty water bottles with my product, and I flew all the way to New York and met with the executives at Dannon. I had an idea for a Froyochino, something that would be like a Frappuccino, but better. How could we scale a better for you Frappuccino? The empire for Frappuccino is billions and billions of dollars. It's a massive empire. How could I create something that could piggyback, but do it better for you? The opportunity was a lactose-free, probiotic, added protein beverage. The one you're drinking today is basically the liquid that would be frozen down into a creamy, indulgent, frozen beverage. We still sell that product today. I was the very first non-owned partnership between Dannon and Joe Froyo at that time. We were originally called Froyochino, which I think is a pretty cool name. Froyochino was the product, and it was also the name of my company for about 3 months until I got sued by Starbucks. I got the old cease and desist from Starbucks saying, we will hunt you down and pound you into the sand until you change your name, because the F in Froyochino and the Chino at the end is too representative of the Frappuccino empire that we've built. Prove it. Do a consumer survey at 15 different locations nationwide. Bring it to court. Argue and argue and argue until you have no money left. I decided just to cease and desist after some consoling by my legal counsel. I quickly changed my name to Joe, as in Java, Froyo, as in the cultured dairy product that we're combining together. So I missed one up there, though. Which one did I miss? Black Bear. If I take a step back, that was the impetus for Joe Froyo. Black Bear was the very first frozen yogurt coffee shop in existence, to our knowledge. We combined two very unfamiliar things, coffee and frozen yogurt. Do you typically see those jammed together? I was living in Washington at the time, and in Washington, they're known for coffee. It rains a lot, liquid sunshine, and we like to stay warm with a cup of coffee. Coffee shops are very familiar, very comfortable, very inviting environments. People understand a coffee shop. At the time, in the county that I was living in, there were zero frozen yogurt shops. Zero. We didn't have any. And so I talked to my buddy. One of my best friends here is Jesse. Jesse Roberts is over in the corner. I don't know why he's hiding, but he was looking to do the Little Caesars deal at the time. He's like, hey, get me into Little Caesars. I was growing my empire at that time. I had 9 locations with Little Caesars. I ended up with 19 at the end of my career, doing $20 million in sales in one division of Little Caesars that we owned. At the time, I knew that I was taking the best spots. I had kind of a beat on where the locations were for Little Caesars. And he's like, hey, Zach, I want to do a Little Caesars. I want to do this. I'm like, Jesse, I can't put you into a C location. If I'm not going to do a location, I'm not going to tell you where to go because it's going to be a B or a C location. I said, but I've got a better idea. Why don't we do frozen yogurt? And it was silent, silence, right? Deadpan. He's like, what? Jesse is a world-class athlete. He holds the world's record for the longest left-handed shot put. He's a member of the USA National Track and Field, went to Olympics, the whole nine yards, traveled professionally for several years. Amazing athlete. I didn't want to do him dirty because he's a big guy. And handsome, yeah. So I told him, I'm like, look, seriously, hear me out. Here's what I'm thinking. Coffee is great. It starts at 5:30 or 6 in the morning, and it dies off about 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Frozen yogurt starts kicking off about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, dies off at about 9:30 or 10. Why don't we take a look at the efficiencies of building a revenue model that goes from 5 in the morning until 10 at night? I've got an idea. Let's create a very comfortable atmosphere that people understand and are familiar with. Then let's introduce something that's not very familiar to them, frozen yogurt, while in the midst of the same comfortable atmosphere. No plastic chairs, no hard white surfaces, no techno music. Sorry, folks. It was all cedar wood, Big Bear carved out of fallen cedar that had been out in the woods. Cedar is naturally hypoallergenic. It doesn't break down. So we took recycled cedar. We treated the walls of our interior. We bought leather armchairs. We made it look really nice and beautiful. And it was a smashing success, smashing success. We went on to build 7-8 locations in that model. I left the business with a non-compete as to street side, but not a non-compete as to a packaged product. So when I left, that's when I developed Joe Froyo. Jesse went on to run the company with some other investors at Black Bear. So I give you this background just to show you kind of the inside of what my mind does when I see opportunities. I look at scale and efficiencies and economics as the driver of success. So let's get to the next couple slides here. Okay. Franchise 101. What does it say? Rinse, lather, and repeat. It's very systematized. And sometimes people have a derogatory statement or a feeling about a franchise. I don't want to be pigeonholed. Okay, fair enough. I don't want to do something that someone else tells me what to do, even though, you know, I still run the business. I don't really want to do that. Okay, that's fine. What other things have you heard about franchises from a negative light? Anybody? Yeah. It takes 6 or 7 in order to be profitable. Yeah, it takes a lot. So scale is a requirement, not an option to be profitable.
You have to do a big investment, and then you also have to give a lot of your profit over to the franchise.
Excellent. So large investment up front and an ongoing royalty payment every single week. Anything else? Yeah. You're accountable to higher-ups that don't have skin in the game. They can put you in a location. They don't spend $500,000 to put you there. You do. Yeah, fair. Those are the negatives. Those are the negatives. There are some positives, though. Here's some value from being a franchisee. There's a ton of value. Think about the proven track record. You've got an idea. You talk to your spouse, and he or she's like, are you out of your mind? If you go to your spouse or your significant other or the voice in your own head, and you see thousands of existing opportunities that are doing exactly the same thing that you are, and you're just looking at transplanting, it makes a lot more sense. So from that perspective, there's value in the prior track record, the history. They've got a playbook. They have a supplier network, corporate office support. There's fluid buyers and sellers, like in real estate. And when you sell your house or your condo, there's people out there that understand that transaction. There's financing available. Banks like franchises. It's easy to find money. And a funny story about that. My first business was a Little Caesars Pizza, which is a franchise. I walked into the bank like this. Oh my gosh, I just really hope that this banker's in a good mood today. I really need this loan. I'm freaking out. If I can't get this, I've already signed the lease. I don't know what I'm doing. Man, I hope this thing goes well. You know what the other side of that conversation was? Here's the banker. Man, I hope this guy's qualified because I really need to get this deal. I've got so much money, but piling up back here, my boss is on my back. Do you see? If you look from this perspective, I was just as desperate as this perspective, yet I didn't understand that. So now I walk into the bank and I get it. I'm like, hey, I know you need to do a loan this month. How's your book doing? What's your portfolio look like this month? What are your closing rates? I know you need to do this deal. I've got a deal for you. And now it's a conversation and not a panic mode. So I want to encourage you that there is money out there. There are funds available, even for non-franchise opportunities. That you have to understand the perspective before you can scale. You've got to understand the economic model on both sides. That's one of the biggest stumbling blocks or limiting beliefs, that I don't know if I could ever pull this off. Well, guess what? The bank needs you to pull it off. Otherwise, they go out of business. Here are some, well, let's call them opportunities, all right? Here are the opportunities. It's not really a franchise. It's your own business. Guess what? Training is up to you. Marketing is up to you. Payroll is up to you. They don't do anything for you in that perspective. You still have to run a business. So from a franchise turnkey, I'm getting into this. Gosh, I got the loan. The banker loves me. All the corporate architects have been out. They visited the site. Ooh, now I got to find a contractor. Ooh, I got to pull permits. Oh, I've got to hire a staff. I've got to train a staff. So there are some challenges to a franchise. It is not, guys, it is not as easy as it might sound. It is absolutely, unequivocally a real, live, breathing business. It is not something that you just drop money into and drive away and collect a check EFT. It doesn't work like that. It's a real business. So those are some of the fallacies that I think people walk into these things. Hey, I'm just going to be a business owner now. And voila. No, it's not like that. But that creates opportunity. And that's why I put opportunity. Because it is your own business. And you do have a chance to make changes. Yes. I have 5 minutes left. Giddy up. All right. All right. So we have systems are a benefit. So these are some great benefits to being in a systemized franchise world. You have all these different replicatable, trustworthy systems. These are the things that you should learn about and take with you and put in your backpack. In college, I worked at Subway. Subway is a fantastically systemized opportunity. Anybody been to Subway and kind of marveled in the fact how they can assemble a sandwich? Love that. Other companies have learned from this too. Mod Pizza does the same thing. They've done this with pizza. Little Caesars has actually done this for years, systematizing theirs. I mentioned one box, one size dough ball. Lines out the door, you need systems. If you don't have a system, you're going to be in trouble. It's going to be a very uncomfortable dinner rush. People in the lobby looking like this. Oh my gosh. How do you take care of a horde of people? You need a system. And they fantastically implement systems. And it's up to you to deliver them. How can you improve an excellent process then? How do you actually deliver value beyond the system that the franchisor has set up? I'll get to that in just one quick second. Combinations are not just for hamburger shops. Combo 2, combo 3. Think about your business. Combos need to create value. Not only do they need to create value, they need to create convenience as well. You can't have value without convenience. Great value takes 5 hours to get your food. It doesn't work, right? Super convenient, but it's, you know, $9 or $95 for a large pizza, but it's really fast. You have to have both. In your business, think about things that could create value and convenience. If you're in web developing, it's a free plus shipping offer, right? If it's in other types of businesses, you have areas where you can create value, you can create combinations. And I'm not talking about combo number one or two. It's really about a mind shift and perspective. Self-interest is an opportunity for you to make leaps and bounds of improvements in your business. Your child versus mine. Your kid and my kid are both out in the street. I can't make it out there quick enough to save them from a car coming at us. Whose kid do you choose? You choose yours, don't you? It's kind of a cold and sobering question. You don't choose my kid to save. You choose your kid to save if you can only choose one. Because you're self-interested. You're not selfish. This is about the psychology of human behavior. If you understand this, then you know that people choose the shortest line. They look for the restaurant at the drive-thru that has the least amount of cars. They go to the grocery store. They don't stand in the line that's 10 deep. They stand in the line that has 2 deep. People are predictable. You can begin to see patterns and use this to your advantage. Best-selling flavor at Carvel? Vanilla. Oh my gosh, we had 30 flavors. Best-selling flavor at Black Bear? Vanilla. Oh my gosh, we have like so many, gazillion flavors. Best-selling pizza at Little Caesars? Pepperoni. Oh my gosh, we make every kind of pizza under the sun and everyone wants a pepperoni pizza. Best-selling sandwich at Subway? Cold Cut Trio. Who orders the Cold Cut Trio? Anybody in here order the Cold Cut Trio? How is it the best-selling sandwich? So here's how I transitioned from franchisee to founder. I took a look at all these things, and I simplified and iterated. Here's a simplification method. I'll read this to you. It's about a pomelo. Anybody know a pomelo? Okay, great. A couple of us. A pomelo is the largest citrus fruit. The rind is very thick, but soft and easy to peel away. The resulting fruit has a light yellow flavor and coral pink flesh and can vary from juicy to slightly dry and from seductively spicy sweet to tangy and tart. Man, this sounds like a description of your product on your website. Look at what you're doing and examine it from a different lens. This is the way you should read. Simplify everything you do because of human interaction. So take a step back and look at it through a different lens. Raw data. Muscle memory is a beautiful thing. Let's not waste it. What is this? You know what this is? It means nothing until you put it into a concept. A concept looks like this. Muscle memory is a beautiful thing. Look for opportunity in your business to create muscle memory momentum. Use things that people already understand and recognize and use them to your advantage. You can take this and turn it to that. I know I'm trying to go fast here, but from concept to founder, I looked at combinations. I actually combined Carvel and Cinnabon. We were the very first co-branded store ever between the two companies. Fun story. Don't have time for it, but really, really fun opportunities. I told you about Black Bear. Going from concept to or idea to concept, there's our actual storefront. This was the drawing from the artist. There's it on the building. There's it inside. We created different types of opportunities within our portfolio. This is the knockoff of Dairy Queen's Blizzard. We created a blend. We have a frozen yogurt with a little secret on top, a little surprise here. Black Bear has a little cookie bear on top, a little something memorable. That's our Yogato. It's an affogato with yogurt. Espresso over the top of frozen yogurt. Fun, fun times. Self-interest. Use that to your advantage. Engineer for success. The size of the straw matters. At Little Caesars, we were the highest 52-week sales average ever for the store, for one single store. Why? Because I took one line of four people and turned it into four lines of one person. One line of four people turned into four one-person lines. My slogan was, too deep is too deep. Two people in line is too deep. We opened up, and the size of the straw magnified by four times. Imagine if you had four straws in your soda or your lemonade. The volume is quite different. That's the volume. The more people you can get through the line, the shorter the line looks. The more people come in the door because they feel like, oh, it's not too crowded today. I'm going to choose that location. They don't drive off. All I did was put three more registers in. Rocket science, right? But the size of my straw quadrupled. Look real close at the Subway example again. You see how many sandwiches this person is making, the sandwich artist? How many? One. Drove me crazy. As a manager of Subway in college, I changed that Subway. I fired everybody, rehired the entire staff when our owner was out of town. Seriously. And I had a mandate. Everybody, every sandwich artist is to make no less than three sandwiches. So they would take the person in front of them to the right and to the left, and they would make three sandwiches and move down the line. We had the highest sales increase recorded in Los Angeles County for Subway. My franchise owner got the award. I got the experience. Look at what they're doing at Blaze Pizza. There's nothing that says you have to make one pizza at a time. It's the franchise owner's decision, and they're not choosing to make it more efficient. You can iterate and innovate within a system that already exists. Little Caesars, the same thing. We did the same thing. You make three to four pizzas at a time. You don't just do one. So here's a success story. I'm just wrapping up right now. This is one slide after this. Success. Look at the highest sales ever increase just by increasing the size of the straw. 52-week sales average. Biggest seven-day opening. $74,000 in 7 days selling a $5 pizza. And more to come. Joe Froyo is simply a company name. We have iterated into other product lines. We are debranding Joe Froyo as a name as we expand the portfolio of products. You are drinking a cold brew. That will change shortly to a branded cold brew outside of the Joe Froyo name. It'll be Cold Press Creamery because it's cold press. The HPP, what we're doing in dairy, we're the only company doing high pressure processing. Nobody else is doing that. What you're drinking today has been cold pressed. No dairy company has done that, to our knowledge. We use the largest HPP tolling facility in North America. We offer probiotics in cold brew, which is difficult to do if you're shelf-stable. So we're not. We're cold chain distributed. We have added protein in there. So we're debranding Joe Froyo. That'll be our frozen blended product. And Cold Press Creamery will now launch a line of probiotic cold brews. We've also launched CremaSmart. CremaSmart is our intelligent dairy. Our dairy innovation brand, which is all lactose-free. This is the world's first powdered half-and-half. Powdered half-and-half doesn't exist. There was no market for it, therefore no large-scale production. We've produced the world's first half-and-half, which is probiotic, lactose-free, and naturally sweetened with one of our proprietary processes. This is called CremaSmart. So we continue to innovate and iterate within our own portfolio of products. What do you take away from this? It's not about the pizza, the food service, and oh great, you were a franchisee. It's really about the lens that you look at. You've got to look closely and examine the efficiencies, the opportunities, the idiosyncrasies, and the different things that you have right in front of your face. And sometimes it takes a step. It takes taking a step back to gain perspective. If you've ever worn a baseball cap and you've turned it around for the rally in the baseball game, the seventh inning stretch, or a rally cap in the ninth, you feel differently. When you turn that baseball cap around backwards or inside out, it feels different. It's the same hat, but it's on backwards. It changes your perspective. And I encourage and challenge you to change your perspective. Examine what you're doing in your daily habits. Examine your limiting beliefs. Examine combinations to offer value and convenience, and examine the efficiencies of what you do. That's my real hope and wish for you guys to take away from today. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Zach. That was amazing. Thank you for sharing your journey with us. There you go. We're going to do Q&A here in a second. So thank you for sharing your journey, also for bringing products for us to perk us up this morning and get us healthier. So that was awesome. They're in the back in the white container if you haven't tried one yet. We are going to go to Q&A now. Please save stories and comments for after. Will you stick around with us for a little bit?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, so a brief sentence with a question mark after is the requirement for this period. John's going to come around with the mic.
Adjusting the, you can go ahead and ask.
Okay.
Zach can answer when the mic is on.
It was a great presentation. And certainly from the way you laid it out, I get an idea of how you applied, you know, the systems and things like that. But I imagine too that there was still a lot of new ground and a very different perspective and experience from starting something yourself, especially a product as opposed to, you know, facilities that, you know, had storefronts. And so I'm just sort of curious, what were some of the biggest learning experiences and differences? Did anything sort of slap you in the face?
Absolutely. I hope you can hear me back there. Consumer behavior still drives your decisions. However,
the dairy aisle. You have a frozen buyer that curates the frozen aisle and so on and so forth. So you really end up asking yourself, who's the customer? Who's my customer? Your first customer is the buyer. and you need to design and develop a plan that looks familiar to them, what they've purchased before, the types of lingo that they use. And so for me, making that transition from opening a store and marketing and going out into the community and doing events didn't really translate as well to a product-based company, although we quickly learned and identified, okay, we know who our customer is now. Retool, reposition, I call it ready, fire, aim. Ready, fire, aim means that you're ready, you take a shot, and you recalibrate, right? You refocus. If that didn't work, refocus again. So the challenge is still there. It's very similar, yet different at the same time. Yes.
Oh, here's Adam.
Over here?
Yes.
So if you had to go back and graduate from college again, would you do it all the same?
Oh, that's not fair. 2020. Hindsight's 2020. I wouldn't change the perspective that I've gained. I think that it was good for me to feel a little uncomfortable talking about things that I'd learned from a book and trying to teach them without having done them. And I think that drove me to really push and to really create opportunity quickly and identify something that, you know, might just be right around the corner on campus, right there. So no, I don't think I would change it. My advice would probably be the same. A good question.
Back here?
Yes.
Hi. I noticed a lot of your opportunities required quite a bit of upfront capital. Can you speak a little bit to how you got that or what kind of smaller funds here in the room we could use to leverage your advice?
Yeah, absolutely. Opium? let me qualify that. OPM, other people's money. Did you think I meant something else? Other people's money. Now, I don't mean that from a negative standpoint. The bank is other people's money. Friends and family is other people's money. A mortgage on your house is other people's money. That's really what I would suggest, is take a look at the resources that you have and only bite off as much as you can chew. Remember my little montage up here about, oh, the banker? The banks need to loan money. They have to. Whether it's a small business loan or a large loan backed by real estate. The way we started is we basically leveraged our condo and we pulled out every penny in a HELOC, home equity line of, you know, home financing, basically. Took money out at a low rate. And we risked it all. We rolled the dice. And so I think if you're asking, is there any free money out there that has no risk or obligation? No. You know how uncomfortable it is to sit at the Thanksgiving table when you owe grandma money? It's uncomfortable. There's no de-risking borrowing money from anybody. But I suggest that you strongly consider the size of the opportunity and look at any angle to support that opportunity.
Back here, Zach.
Yes.
Hi. I'm curious how you think about marketing a brand new location from scratch and what that looks like and how to go from zero traction to a steady state.
I encourage you to work on your business instead of in your business. Most entrepreneurs are inside the store and they turn on the open sign and they think that that's the floodgate and they're open. They've been looking from the inside out through the windows, hoping that people walk in the door because they've been working in their business, getting it open. They've been there every day on site with the job site, doing diligently what they should do. And there's a difference between doing things right and doing the right thing. Big difference between doing things right and doing the right thing. Doing things right is being there and getting stuff done. Doing the right thing is making sure that you're working on your business. So for grand openings where we broke the record in 7 days, we were there 3 months in advance working with the newspaper. We were sponsoring different activities and events prior to grand opening. We were seeding the market. We were giving away free pizza certificates just to get people to come in the door. Free always tastes better. Free tastes really good, actually. So you think about, why would we give away free pizza to get people to come and buy? We broke the record, $74,000 in 7 days, by giving away free pizza certificates, because they don't just buy one. When you receive value, you return value. I hate the 10% off at the lunch special. That's not a special. Give me your friend is free today at lunch. No strings attached. Guess what? Two people know where you are. They've gotten out of their car. They've walked in your door. They've tried your food, and now they're advocates. Free tastes better, but give them a reason to come, and they will. Don't, and they won't.
Hi. obviously failure is such a huge part of life, especially when you're starting out. Did you have any epic failures, and what did you learn, and how did you pick yourself back up and continue?
I have failed forward on everything that I've done. Everything. I mean, every trial has an error, right? Every corner is dark until you get around it. Every alley has no lights until you walk through it. So failure is part of the equation. I don't think there is a concept or a business owner that would suggest that you can have success without failure. In fact, most of my biggest successes have come after failure. I had an investment company that I lost during the big finance downturn. When you go from hero to zero real quick in a couple of days and you lose a portfolio, yeah, it's a pretty sobering experience, especially when it's out of your control. And I think from a former student athlete perspective, from a guy, like, we don't want to quit. We want to push harder. And so what I've really learned from failure is to just know when to say when, know when to say uncle. And it's not about how hard you can fight and how long you can last. It's about making smart business decisions that recalibrate quicker. And I think some of my biggest failures were not giving in, basically, to accept, hey, this isn't working. I need to change the channel. And I kept pushing and pushing and pushing because I was raised to run with a side ache, to keep pushing. If you have a struggle or a hardship, keep going, keep running. And actually, that's actually really bad advice.
You are just the absolute picture of an entrepreneurial spirit, and I love that. So who are your like closest confidants? Because it takes a lot of energy to do what you do, and you have to have someone that you really trust to say, hey, let's look at this.
You know, first is my wife, and I have a very supportive wife that you can't stick your neck out there and say, honey, I'm going to just leverage the house without a co-signer. So I think my wife, you know, is definitely a huge support. And Jesse in the back has been one of my confidants. You know, we've walked through a lot of stages of life together and just been able to kind of plow through life and turmoil and frustration and success too, being there with phenomenal success during grand openings. He and I have stood in the doorway just thinking, man, what a cool feeling to be able to create something. It is a lonely spot at the top, and I have to, you know, be honest about that. It is a little bit lonely because I found that true success, you know, very few people can handle success. Most people can handle adversity. Very few people can handle success, even if it's the success of their friends. There's always that, oh, he's driving that, or he's doing that, or they're going on that vacation. There's always that little, so it is, it's uncomfortable. And at the same time, you can't be ashamed to reap the rewards of hard work. And if you're really willing to transition your thoughts and your mind and your actions, that's the key, to doing something differently, you will make a change. You can affect change. And so it's been an interesting journey, you know, watching the friendships evolve. But there's been some real steady rocks, so I appreciate that.
Trying to think of how to phrase this. So I guess that my question is about how scale can kind of be reconciled with if you're selling a premium product, because I noticed that a lot of the business that you've been in, you're talking about something that's consistent and something that for an individual who's buying it, it's fairly low cost. And my experience so far in doing video or photography or things like that is that there's a risk of hundreds or perhaps thousands or perhaps tens of thousands of dollars. And for that, absolutely nothing has worked except for, I guess you could call them high touch interactions or making sure that people know, like, and trust you. Nothing else has had even remotely the same success rate. So I was wondering what lessons you might think could be taken from what you're talking about scalability to something where there's much higher risk for a client who might be interested in your services.
I think it's a matter of perspective. I shop less for a $90,000 car than I do for dinner at night. I mean, think about it. Some of the biggest purchases that you've made in your life, if you've gone on a home search, you looked at 10 houses, maybe 5 houses. I don't know that it's really a matter of the size of the opportunity. I think all the economics still play. You have to find value. You have to create value to receive value. And a lot of big, big companies don't just start off offering $250,000 packages, right? There are starter packages. Look at all the online software as a service type clients that are out there, or customers or businesses, I should say. They have a trial period. And then they graduate you into a level one, and then they're your professional, then you're an enterprise customer. So I would encourage you to create scale within your menu. Create a menu that they can choose from and say yes. Create opportunities for them to say yes. That's what we're doing in our portfolio, is coming with multiple products, so that when we take the risk of driving or flying somewhere, we give them an option of multiple things to choose from and multiple ways to say yes. I know free tastes good. I don't know how your business operates, but I have a friend in Hollywood that started off and still does this today, making commercials for large companies, big, big, big companies for free. Sends those demo tapes in and no strings attached. Hey, if you like this, we can do this for you for real, basically. Now, it takes a lot of money to do that, so they're very strategic in who they go after. They analyze and do a lot of research. It's not just a jump off a diving board, but they've taken a calculated risk. They know the production value is going to cost them $30,000, but the size of the opportunity is $3 million. They put every effort into that free demo to show that they have the chops to do this. And it's been working really, really well for him. So if that's perspective for you, create a menu of opportunities, allow people to graduate up. We did that at Little Caesars. We sold a $5 pizza. At dinner, I kept a hot and ready $9.99 Supreme pizza. It sold like gangbusters. People aren't coming in for a $5 pepperoni. They actually like other toppings. They'll buy the pepperoni, but they'll also buy three meat. They'll buy a veggie pizza. They'll buy a Supreme pizza, only if it's ready, because value and convenience have to be hand in hand. You can't tell them, oh, we can make any pizza you want. Wait 20 minutes. No. Keep the pizzas ready that you know they're going to sell. And in that analogy, give them something that you know they'll go for free, and graduate them up into something of more value.
Great presentation, Zach. Got one last question for you. What are some of the goals and objectives that you have for Jofroyo, and what are some of the challenges and obstacles that you're currently facing to get to what your goals and objectives are?
Ultimately, we want to create a brand of dairy innovation. The dairy industry is extremely old and archaic in the most respectful way. Take a look at the bottles that they still use, the old milk jug, not very glamorous. And they've lost a lot of ground to the nut milks of the world. Those who have really iterated and innovated by packaging design, colors, and beautiful ad campaigns all around a soybean soaked in water. To be blunt, what I'm looking at is to take a cue from them. Take a look at what the Calafia Farms has done. Take a look at what Silk has done. Take a look at what these nut milks and other alternative milks, what are they really saying? They're saying to the consumer, you want something that's new, innovative, different, and fresh, and it doesn't upset your stomach. We're doing the same thing. We just have to educate people that you can do that with real dairy by converting the lactose to sugar, which is already in there. The beverages that you consume today, look at the back panel. It says zero added sugar. It's all natural. So one thing for us is to iterate and innovate in a space that people are very frustrated with. The buyers are like, no, milk is not the next big thing. Oats are the next big thing. Okay. So for me, it's really it's an opportunity to really shift the mindset of the buyers and to reintroduce them to something that is the most nutritious, the cleanest beverage known to mankind, the initial clean label, right? Most minerals per ounce, very fantastic beverage called milk, sans lactose. So we are iterating and innovating. By pulling out the lactose, we're doing it in a powdered form. We're doing it in our liquid form. The creamer, the half and half that you can enjoy back here, is probiotic, lactose-free half and half you can pour into your coffee. So we're taking a very old space that's awkward and old-fashioned and trying to be cool and fashion forward, if you will. So it's a real challenge. Again, everything's curated by buyers. So it's really speaking to them, understanding who our customer is, and then really getting out there and showing the customer, the consumer, the ultimate end buyer, that you can have this product, you can enjoy this product. And it's something that you may not have considered, but it's been right in front of you the whole time. So that's the biggest opportunity and the challenge. Yeah.
Awesome. All right.
All right. Thank you.